I think we're going to get started. We don't need a quorum for an informational hearing, so we're just going to get started and bring folks up. This is the Mining and Outdoor Recreation Committee, and what we want to do today is have a hearing on some of the new regulations that the DNR put in place for Lake Mille Lacs this year. And we want to hear how they came up with those new regulations, why they came up with those new regulations, and we're going to have some folks from Mille Lacs that want to comment on that as well, some people that live around the lake, have businesses on the lake, etc. So with that, we're going to start. I guess I can't officially bring the meeting to order, but we'll have this informational hearing. If we get a quorum, we'll at least adopt the minutes from the last meeting. So with that, welcome to the committee, Commissioner. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. I have with me today Don Pereira, our Chief of Fisheries for the Fish and Wildlife Division, who has a presentation that we want to go through with you and have this discussion. But first, it's important that we talk about how we got to the regulation today. So Mr. Pereira is going to give a little bit of history of the population dynamics of the fishery, some of the challenges that we're facing, the work that we've done recently on research, trying to investigate and come up with some of these answers, so to speak. And then the second part of his presentation will focus on the 2015 regulation that will be in effect here in the coming weeks. And also we have Major Rodman Smith available from the Enforcement Division to answer any questions, should there be any. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
Very good. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Don Pereira. I'm Chief of Fisheries with the Minnesota DNR.
Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity to come and make this presentation to you and your committee today. Mille Lacs Lake has posed a very significant challenge for the department and for the community around the lake. In fact, in my 30-plus years with the department, it's probably been the most challenging and complex problem I've worked on. So, as Commissioner Meyer mentioned, the front part of my presentation will explain the complexity and the degree of changes that this lake has undergone over the past 20 years. It's important to have a good understanding of that because our regulations are in part driven by these changes in the lake. So with that, I will move into my presentation. So again,
this is the handout that you're going to be referring to.
It is, okay. Correct.
Thank you.
And I should be able to get through that in about 30 minutes. If I need to accelerate, just let me know and I'll move along quicker. So, okay. So, basically, the fundamental problem that we now understand very well in Mille Lacs is that young walleyes are not surviving to reach a size where they recruit into the fishery. So, somewhere between their first fall and their third fall in the lake, the mortality rate of those fish has been elevated. Fisheries management certainly has had a role in some of the changes that have happened in the walleye population, but if we're going to really solve this, we're really going to have to understand the dynamics that are happening in this complex system and the interactions on all the different moving parts before we can really identify what the best management response might be. So we 2 years ago, we convened a panel of outside experts from around the country. These are five scientists that are basically the tops in understanding walleye fisheries and the fish communities that support walleye fisheries. We gave them all our data. We did not give them our opinions. We wanted them to take the data, and we wanted them to tell us what they think is going on. So it was basically an unbiased review. We're doing quite a bit more intensive field work right now to try to better identify the mechanisms that are causing these changes and also what solutions might be able to use. And we're also increasing our process for involving citizens. So we basically put together, a couple years ago, we put together basically a five-point action plan. And basically I'm going to focus on fish management, and that'll be mostly the history over the past 20 to 30 years on the lake leading us up to where we are today. But I'm also going to talk quite a bit about how the lake has changed, how the habitat of the lake is changing, the aquatic ecology of the lake. So Mille Lacs has undergone, over the past 30 years, a dramatic number of changes, more than probably any other lake in the state. We're seeing considerable changes in the native fish species in the lake. We know that Tulubi cisco, a very important forage fish, is down in abundance. As you'll see later in my talk, it's also down in abundance across the state. We know that northern pike, its smallmouth bass, are increasing dramatically in recent years. We know that the lake started to clear up maybe 20 years ago. This could be basically from the first actions following the passage of the Clean Water Act. We know we have a number of invasive species. The most notable one is zebra mussel that everybody's focused on, but the one that we know has had the most dramatic changes in the lake is something called the spiny water flea, which is this rather ugly critter right here on the bottom. We also have Eurasian milfoil. We also have a cormorant colony that's been increasing in recent years as well. So here's the issue. This is on the left is a time series of male walleye over time going from 1986. These are mature males, so these are the spawners in the lake. You can see this very clear trend. This trend probably started in the late 1990s. The blue line is our fisheries management model, a statistical catch at age model, and the red line is our assessment gill net. So you can see that they show the same thing. In contrast, on the right are females. Females actually increased in abundance, partly through management because we were conserving large fish, successfully so. And in more recent years, those females are starting to decline. The decline in those females is because those young fish are not surviving. It's not because they're not spawning efficiently, and I will show you that clearly in slides in the future of my talk. The thing about Mille Lacs, it is and still is the most heavily fished lake in the state. We think of it now as a lake that doesn't have a lot of activity on it because of the decline in walleye, but we can clearly see from this graph that the short red lines are our other several of our other large lakes that show you where their average fishing effort is. For example, the dark blue line on the bottom is rainy. The orange line up near the top is Vermilion. You can see that even today, with a recent decline in fishing effort, Mille Lacs is still the most heavily fished lake in the state. And also on the, and this is also standardized by lake size. So this is angler hours per acre. Obviously, Lake of the Woods would be a lot higher, but we need to standardize it by the size of the lake. And then on the right, we see what the anglers are killing for walleye, expressed as pounds per acre. You can see that Mille Lacs has declined precipitously in recent years. Part of this is because we've had to restrict the kill of walleye in the lake as a critical conservation response to the decline. And you can see where it sits. You should note in 1992, we harvested 1.2 million pounds of walleye from this lake. That's that big peak. That blows all the other lakes away. Now, in retrospect, when we look at that event now, we would probably not want to see an event like that happen ever again. We think that was an overfishing event. And there was a decline following that, but that decline probably was exacerbated more by changes in the lake, whatever changes are causing this elevated rate of juvenile fish more than anything else. So you've heard me talk about elevated juvenile mortality, and here it is. This is relative survival after the first fall in the lake until about age 3. So we want to be high. If we're high on this graph, that means that these young fish are surviving well. You can see in 1980 when this time series started, survival was pretty good. Relative survival was up around 0.8. But disturbingly, there's a very clear declining trend here. This is the fundamental problem. This is what's limiting walleye productivity in the lake. Now, what about spawners? This is basically the catch of young fish in the lake during before they start to go into this bottleneck when they have higher mortality. So you can see in recent years, the spawners in the lake clearly are producing plenty of young fish for the first summer. That's really, really obvious and really clear to us. So we hear a lot of criticism about why are we allowing fish to be harvested when they're spawning? You can kill fish when they're spawning as long as you control the numbers that are being killed. There are fisheries all over the world that are prosecuted on spawning aggregations of fish. If you control the number that are killed, that does not constitute a conservation problem. If that was a problem, we would see a decline in age-year walleyes in the lake during the first summer and into that first fall. We do not see that. In fact, in recent years, we see relatively high numbers of young fish in the lake. And also, in the lower graphic, the one thing that's great about Mille Lacs is all the spawning habitat. It's like the shores of that lake are one massive spawning shoal, at least the east, the west, and the south shores. It's scoured by ice. There are no problems with zebra mussels. So we're lucky to have such great habitat in the lake, and we're also lucky to still have an abundance of spawning fish today to produce lots of young fish. So here is the spawning fish. The blue line is Mille Lacs. It's female spawning biomass. We're quite certain that there are plenty of females in the lake today to keep producing young fish. And a lot of people want to compare this to Red Lake, so we put Red Lake on this graphic. Red Lake is the red line. You can see how desperate things were in the mid-1990s in Red Lake. This is why we went in and we stocked Red Lake, because we knew that population was so spawner limited, it would take a long time for it to recover on its own. So we made the difficult decision to go into Red Lake and aggressively stock walleye fry for 3 years to help that lake recover. Right now, I like to think of the number of young walleyes in Mille Lacs as the analogy of a bucket of water that's full works really well here. Right now, if that bucket of water constitutes the capacity of breeding walleyes to put young fish in a lake, it is full. If we stock more fish in the lake right now, it would be just like pouring more water into that full bucket. It would simply overflow and we really wouldn't achieve anything at all. And here's what I'm talking about. This is Mille Lacs fry production. These are the tiny fish that are about a half an inch long right after they hatch. And this is the amount of wild fry per literal acre, so standardized by lake size over time. In contrast, where we've really done a lot of good work to really understand the dynamics of walleye fry was up on Leech Lake with the issues we've had up there over the past 10 years. We've been able to identify an optimal zone of fry production on Leech Lake, and it's somewhere around 500 fry per literal acre. So we put Leech Lake on here so we can compare it to Mille Lacs today. You can clearly see from this that Mille Lacs is not having a problem laying eggs, getting those eggs hatched into fry. The problem happens later on, and that's not related directly to the capacity of fish to spawn. It's not related to harvesting fish while they're spawning either. This is the most clear and obvious result we have from assessing the lake. So this is a description that the Blue Ribbon Panel put together. It just basically shows the life cycle of walleye from spawners. Spawners produce eggs. Those eggs hatch out into these small fry, and then they grow larger into submature fish before they recruit back into the spawning stock to provide more spawning for the future. The assessment of the Blue Ribbon Panel said unlikely there are any issues with spawners, unlikely there's any issues with them laying their eggs and getting those eggs into hatching. That problem happens later on with juvenile fish. That's the opinion of the Blue Ribbon Panel. We'll have the chair of the Blue Ribbon Panel actually making a presentation tonight up by Garrison for the community to hear their opinion on that. So this graphic basically shows how we manage walleye according to size. This is male and female walleye. The left graphic is the abundance of fish between 14 and 20 inches. Basically what we did was we ended up targeting too much fishing mortality on those fish between 15 and 18 and 20 inches, both state management and tribal fishing. So in the males were more vulnerable. The males are more vulnerable to gill nets when they're spawning because they come up on the shoals and stay there at night. Females come up and they drift down. Males are actually more vulnerable to our slot as well. If the lower end of our slot is 18 inches, males take another year to 2 years to get to the bottom of that slot before they're protected. So even in the state's sport fishery, they're subjected to more fishing mortality. You can see for larger fish, for females, this is the orange arrow was where the tribal fishery started. And then the red arrow is where the state first started slot-based regulations. Before that, we were fiddling around with minimums. So for the females, you can see that this large buildup in female fish, even after the tribal fishery started, males were fairly stable. Large males are in decline now. Larger females are in decline now. I really want to stress that larger females are in decline now because those young fish aren't surviving to replenish the spawning stock. So our current management challenge right now is to really stop this decline in female spawners. It's not at Red Lake. We do not want it to get to Red Lake. So we have to be really careful on the amount of fish that we're allowed to be harvested in the coming years until we see new fish coming in. So basically, what is our harvest rule? This is going to be revised. The Blue Ribbon Panel suggested that this does need to be revised. Our harvest rule right now is we estimate the total poundage of fish in the lake that are 14 inches and larger, and we allow all sources of fishing to kill 24% of those in a given year. The problem is that both fisheries, the tribal fishery and the state's fishery, are size selective. I basically just described that. The tribal fishery really takes a lot of fish smaller than 18 inches. Their catch is like 80% male fish because of the behavior of the fish when they're spawning. And again, the state slot limits also target smaller fish as well. So we basically focus too much fishing mortality on fish between 15 to 18 to 20 inches. That's not a conservation problem now. It's a management challenge for the future that we need to change. So our regulations, if we can get the system recovered, will be different. So again, males are more vulnerable to harvest because they take a longer time to grow up to the bottom of that protected slot, and also because of their behavior. So here's the graphic of total kill. So this keeps it into perspective. The blue is the state harvest over time. You can see the decline. And then the green bar is the tribal harvest over time as well. They've brought their harvest way down along with the state's harvest. Basically, when we set a safe harvest level, they set their declaration at 28.5% of that, and the rest go to state anglers. So you can see that in most years, the state is still killing more fish than the tribes are. This also includes what is also accounted for in the state's fishery are fish that are released that die of hooking mortality. We have to account for that as a sort of source of fishing mortality, even though those fish aren't harvested and utilized. They still are dying of fishing, basically. So now I'm going to switch, and I'm going to talk about changes in the system. Here's this issue with increased water clarity. We typically think of increased water clarity as a good thing. Water quality means clearer water. So we can see in recent years, beginning in the mid-90s, there was a sharp increase in water clarity in the lake. At the same time, through our summer seining on the beaches, we saw a pretty clear change in behavior of very young walleyes at about 2 to 4 inches. They were abandoning the shallows in July, and they were going offshore into deeper water. We started catching them in our gill nets in September at about the same time. People think, well, zebra mussels are changing the lake. They are changing the lake, but this is when zebra mussels arrived. So this water clarity issue started before zebra mussels ever arrived in the lake. This big peak here in 2013, if that zebra mussels, we don't know. 2013, if you recall, was a very late ice out. We saw clear water in the spring all around the state in 2013. Again, it's a very confounded world that we try to work in. Here's Northern Pike. So one of the things that you see happen when you increase water clarity, you increase plant growth. Rooted plants like light. So rooted vegetation grows more vigorously. It grows deeper. We have milfoil beds that are now growing out to, I think, 20 foot of water. Pike-like plants. Increase plants, you increase pike habitat. We do special assessments specifically for northern pike. Our juvenile assessments in two recent years were at record levels for production of juvenile pike. So pike are approaching record high levels in Mille Lacs right now. That's a key change in a native predator. I will also let you know that it's also a popular sport species. So as you know, we've been really encouraging the angling community to get up and fish for northern pike. And that was a big part of our decision to open the lake, the dark house spearing this past year as well. Another native is smallmouth bass. These are pounds per net in our assessment fishery. This looks pretty dramatic, and it's very clear that smallmouth are increasing clearly in the lake. But if you look at total numbers of smallmouth in the lake, it's still a lot less than walleye. They're still not a dominant predator ecologically. They're a fantastic trophy fishery. Terry McCoy told me that he is a customer from Tennessee. If the guy gets a long weekend, he drives all the way to Mille Lacs to fish smallmouth. It's spectacular. We want to maintain that trophy fishery, but it's also a fish that's not bad eating either. So we want to provide some harvest opportunity as a substitute for walleye, for the smaller walleye harvest. So here's zebra mussels. Zebra mussels peaked in abundance. This is number of zebra mussels per square feet. I think the total count is something ridiculous, like 2 trillion zebra mussels in the lake. The good news is that it peaked in 2012, and it's been coming down since. So usually when you see this invasion wave, quite often invaders go up really high, and then they come down to a lower level. We've seen that happen in places like Lake Winnebago and elsewhere. Where they're going to settle in, we don't know. What the full ecological impacts are, we don't really know either. Some of the food web analysis done by outside researchers funded by us indicates that zebra mussels could actually provide a positive situation for crayfish. We know that smallmouth bass like crayfish, so maybe this might indirectly help smallmouth bass in the lake. We don't really know. It's largely speculative. This is the spiny water flea. This is a nasty animal. It's not very big. You can see it with the naked eye. It feeds on other zooplankton, small zooplankton, and that's what you see in this graphic right here. The small zooplankton that this invasive species likes to eat are in red. You can see that they're almost gone. We see in this effect also up on Rainy Lake and Lake of the Woods as well. It's a very clear signal. This could be impacting the quality of food resources for very small fish like small yellow perch and small walleyes right after they hatch. Walleyes like to start eating fish right away, but yellow perch, possibly Tulipa siscal, could be affected by essentially competition with this animal that's actually a predator. So we're concerned about this. There's some emerging information from a rainy Namekin rule curve study that indicates perch growth could possibly be declining up in that system, and it could be because of spiny water flea invasion. We have a lot of concern here. Here's Cisco, Tulipa, if you will. Statewide, there's a clear decline in our statewide surveys, and here's Mille Lacs. This is a very important forage animal. Pike and muskies like it. Big walleyes like it. It's like a stick of butter with fins on it. It's high fat. It's a great food resource. In 2006 to 2008, our catches were so low, we thought we were on the verge of extirpation. We thought Tulipa were going to be gone in Mille Lacs. They did spawn. The good thing about this fish is they can show very, very high production rates. If they can get young fish to survive, those fish grow very, very quickly and will soon be replenishing the stock of mature fish in the lake. But you can see we're still down low again, so we think things are not in a stable situation with Cisco of Tulipa in the lake, and we're concerned about that as well. And the blue ribbon panel refers to the possibility that these Tulipa could also have an indirect impact on walleye predation on young walleye because they provide a buffer. If you take away the preferred forage of a predator, it's going to start eating other things. And if those other things are small walleye, that's not a good thing. So to summarize, walleye predators are increasing, notably northern pike, smallmouth bass. Muskies are not a problem in Mille Lacs. We manage it for a very low density. We manage muskies statewide for one adult per four acres. Muskies in Mille Lacs are one adult per 50 acres. So the amount of fish that muskies are consuming in Mille Lacs are nothing compared to walleye and northern pike. Tulipa are declining. We have concerns about perch. We don't think perch productivity has been where it should be. Anglers aren't seeing the large perch that they used to. Increased water clarity is helping sight feeders. Multiple aquatic invasive species, we don't fully understand the full implications of that yet. Warmer growing seasons are favoring certain species, notably smallmouth bass. Increased die-offs, summer die-offs of Cisco could be, Tulipa could be an issue related to warmer conditions. And we haven't yet identified why walleyes aren't producing large year classes. That is, we haven't identified the primary source of predation on these young walleyes. So our objectives, our number one goal, obviously, is do whatever we can to improve this walleye fishery as soon as possible and try to minimize the impacts to the local community. We brought in these outside experts for review, where we're developing new ways that we can engage the citizens more vigorously. We clearly need to conserve the remaining spawning population in the lake, and that's why our harvests are low right now. The 2013 year class is very strong. We hope it survives this gauntlet. If it does survive, it's a bit of a catch-22. It has to replenish the spawning stock, but we want it to provide fishing as well. So those decisions are going to be very tricky. And then also, as you can see, we really want to encourage anybody and everybody to utilize other species in the lake. Smallmouth bass, northern pike, and muskie. So the ultimate topic of the presentation today is how did we come to the regulations that we chose in 2015. So in February every year, after we determine what the safe harvest level is, and our staff does a lot of analysis to look at options for regulations, we hold an input group meeting, usually up in Hazleton Town Hall, just north of the lake. So I'll show you some of the results of that input meeting. So again, to reiterate, we need to preserve spawners. We want to protect the 2013 fish. So that brought us to the 2015 regulation, a slot limit of 19 to 20. Only one fish bag and only one fish over 28 inches. We feel that this conservative management is needed to conserve spawners and until we can see those young fish come in and replenish the spawning stock. So this is kind of a complex graphic, but it kind of shows you some of the math that we do to try to choose the regulation. So basically our goal is to allow some fishing, but allow zero to very minimum decline in spawners. So the goal is going to be to see the choose a regulation whereby the decline in female spawning biomass will be less than 5%. So this is the probability of achieving that goal. This is what the total kill would be. So the higher the kill is going to be, then the lower the probability is of achieving that goal, obviously. And each of these colored lines is a different regulation. So if we just focus on the probability of 50%, just for the sake of discussion, of achieving this goal of a little to no decline in female spawners, the regulation that's going to allow the most kill is going to be the one that's furthest to the right. And that's this purple line right here. And that's the one that we came at this year, a harvest slot of 19 to 21 inches. We'll provide the most harvest with the best probability of achieving that goal of minimizing the decline in female spawners. So that's how we got to 19 to 21. Here's another way of looking at it. The hatched area under this graph is the probability that we exceed allocation. If we exceed allocation this year, we go to catch and release. We want to minimize the probability that we go to catch and release before the open water season ends. So if we went with last year's regulation, a harvest slot of 18 to 20 with a bag of two, the projected kill is going to be about 60,000 pounds. That means we have a 96% chance of exceeding the allocation and going to catch and release before the end of the open water season. If we go to a 19 to 21 with the bag limit of one, the regular 10 p.m. night closure that happens after the opener goes until early June, we would still have nearly a 50-50 chance of exceeding the allocation and going in catch and release before the close of the season. Therefore, we wanted to reduce the probability of catch and release during the open water season to less than 25%, say 20 to 25%. That means we need additional restrictions in addition to the 19 to 21 and the one bag. So that's what we discussed that with the input group. If we achieve that by adding on a season long closure from 10 p.m. until 6 a.m. for the entire season, then we bring those odds of catch and release down to 21%. Not bad odds. Our feeling on this is that catch and release is going to be economically dramatic up there. We just want to avoid it. So here's how we get input. We use these clickers where the input group can actually choose something anonymously and we can see what their response is live right on the screen during the meeting. So we asked a few questions. Would you want to lower your risk of going to catch and release, but you would have to take on additional restrictions in the fishery? One-third of the group chose that option. Or would you rather say, I'll accept higher risk, I'll accept catch and release fishing, I don't want additional regulations. An equal number chose that option. While we were at the meeting, one of the stakeholders said, why don't we just go to catch and release right away this year? So we went ahead and live and put it up there. And you can see this blue line right here was only 17% wanted to go to catch and release only. And then 17% just weren't sure what they wanted to do. So then we said, okay, if we're going to have additional restrictions, what should they be? So here are some options. The two most popular options are an entire season night closure, which is what we decided on, and also the bag limit of one. So this is from our input group. We provided it to them. They gave us input, and that's what we're going. So that's where we're at this year for the walleye regulation, both with the analysis that we've had to do to see what we need to do to conserve spawning stock, and also with input from the input group at our regular meeting. Just some of the quick comments on the walleye polling. Last year, there was very little interest in putting additional restrictions on the fishery. That basically changed this year. People realized that the situation is getting more and more severe up in the lake. The catch and release option was added at the meeting that night because it came from the floor. You're going to see that with Northern Pike as well in just a minute. And, the most favored supplemental options was to extend the night closure all season, to have a bag limit of one. Bait restrictions were quite unpopular, so we're not going to be restricting the type of bait that can be used. So how about Northern Pike? We did complete a diet study over several years. It did show that northern pike eat small walleye. In fact, in one of the years, they ate more small walleye than the walleyes ate themselves. And even though walleye are down in abundance, they're still 4 to 5-fold more abundant than northern pike. Mille Lacs is still a lake that's dominated by walleye right now. But northern pike are a predator that's an efficient predator. We know from other work around the state that, yes, they can put a major herd on walleyes in some situations. And so we really want to focus more harvest on these northern pike that are smaller than 30 inches. One idea that at the time I thought was kind of crazy that came up at the input group was Erna trophy, similar to Erna buck. In Wisconsin, they instituted Erna buck 1 year where if you're going to, they have problems with the deer herd getting too big, and if you're going to shoot a buck, you had to kill a doe first. That regulation actually biologically worked really, really well. It was socially unacceptable, so it was dropped. So it was suggested at the meeting, what about Erna trophy with northern pike? We do know from last year when we opened it up, we extended the season, we increased the bag limit to 10 with 1 over 30. We still had exploitation rates on big pike that were unacceptably high. So we need to try to bring that down this year. The exploitation rate on pike last year, larger than 36 inches, was 20%. That means that 1/5 of all the pike larger than 36 inches in the lake were taken out in 1 year, and that's not acceptable. We'd like to bring that down to half. We think that Erna trophy might help us do that. If you're going to kill a fish larger than 30, you have to have 2 dead smaller than 30. And by if we have compliance with that, that should really reduce the amount of fishing mortality on these bigger fish. We think of bigger fish as eating machines. They're not the eating machine. The eating machine is this large number of fish smaller than 30 inches. Those are also the good eaters, those fish between 24 and 30 inches. So the dark house community, their leadership are working with us to try to get the spears to really let those big fish swim by and really focus on the smaller fish. So we're doing a lot of heavy outreach on this right now. So that'll be interesting. We don't know if it'll work. It's an opportunity to try something new. We're willing to stick our neck out. So let's look at, here's the results from the diet study. So this is the proportion of young walleyes that were consumed by the 3 different predators that we were looking at. You can see that walleyes themselves accounted for 1/2 of those young walleyes that were consumed. That was in 2012, 2013. Pike were a small component. Smallmouth bass were not measurable. Smallmouth bass like to eat crayfish. They eat a few small walleyes in the fall, but not enough to matter. 2013 to 2014, more pike in the system. Walleyes are going down. You can now see that pike are now eating proportionally as much young walleyes as the walleyes are themselves. And by the way, walleyes eating small walleyes is something that happens all over the place. It just happens. So smallmouth bass ate a few small walleyes in 2013-14, but not enough to make a difference. So this should not be animated. I apologize for that. So this is the input on northern pike. The options that we offered were some maximums, protected slot. We wanted to fix the start date of the fishery, that is to move the spear fishery back later in the season because we had early ice last year, and that's when a lot of big fish were taken. So we threw that out there because they wanted to hear about it. And then this Erna trophy thing, that came up from the floor that night right at the meeting. So boom, we popped that on the slide, and there it is. Almost half of the input group said, let's give this Erna trophy a try. And we don't have a lot we don't have a lot at risk with this. We don't think the conservation issue with big fish is a serious problem because there are so many small fish coming up, and pike grow very fast in Mille Lacs. They really do. So that's where we're at with northern pike. So let's see how the Erna trophy works. It'll be interesting if nothing else. So just some comments on how the polling went. Again, the fixed start date was the delay of the beginning of the spearing season, so it was a little later. Our analysis indicated this would probably not really reduce the exploitation rate on big pike all that much. We feel that the Erna trophy has the potential to reduce exploitation on big pike by about as much as 50%, which is what we want. So all of these regulations rely on compliance. If you get an angling community that's going to behave badly and not comply, it's not going to work. As you know, our enforcement officers cannot enter a fish house. They have to be... the angler inside has to voluntarily allow them to be interviewed. When we've had very detailed discussions with our enforcement officers about these regulations and specifically how we're going to try to make them work. They tell us that their denial rate when they knock on a door is less than 2%. So most anglers and spears alike are willing to be interviewed by an enforcement officer when they're on the lake. We're going to watch this closely. If that noncompliance rate really rises heavily, that means that people probably aren't behaving well. And if that's the case, we could come in mid-season and change the regulation to make it more restrictive on big pike. We're going to watch it closely and respond accordingly. I didn't talk too much about the night ban. The musky anglers like to fish muskies at night, so that's why we're allowing musky fishing at night, but with the bait restriction. If they're going to fish with sucker minnows, they have to be larger than 8 inches. If they're going to fish artificial baits, those artificial baits have to be larger than 8 inches. And that means no other boat can be in the bait. No other bait can, smaller bait size can be in the boat. So we're giving the musky guys an exemption, but they're going to have to do a little bit of work to have their gear together so they don't have any illegal size baits in the boat. And if somebody is fishing at night and they singe a line to make it look, we're going to allow people to be on the water too, by the way, with fishing gear in the boat, as long as the line isn't in the water. We got complaints last year because folks like to be out on the water on the 4th of July to see the fireworks. Enforcement is willing to work with us. They know how to use their discretion to allow people to go out boating at night. But we want to really restrict the walleye fishery at night is what we really need to do. So we're trying to make as many exceptions as we can. I do want to talk quickly about smallmouth bass. We get criticized by some people for increasing the kill on smallmouth bass. We increase the bag limit. We're allowing people to kill fish smaller than 18 inches. But we want to conserve that trophy fishery, those fish larger than 18 inches. So we think we can do both. When we liberalized it last year, we still did not kill a lot of smallmouth bass, so we don't have a conservation issue. Here's the polling result. 89% of the people at the input group meeting were fine with staying with the current regulation. A bag of six, only one fish over 18 inches. That was clearly the most popular one. And then we talked about the season. Because we opened it, we allowed the bass fishery to open with the walleye fishery. Do you want to leave it as is, or do you want to go back to the statewide season? A little more than half, we're fine with leaving it where it is. Now, we're also going to have a change in our rule package this coming year, because statewide, we're going to have a catch-and-release fishery for black bass going from the walleye open to Memorial Day anyways. But we'll allow anglers to actually harvest smallmouth bass on Mille Lacs, beginning with the walleye opener. We're looking at cormorants. There's the primary nesting colony is on Spirit Island. The Spirit Island is in the National Fish and Wildlife Service refuge system. It's part of the Rice Lake refuge system. So we can't really go out there and control cormorants unless we convince the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that this control is consistent with their management philosophy for the refuge system. We're doing an analysis right now. That colony is at about 500 breeding pairs. The initial analysis indicates that it's not a key source of walleye predation. We're going to do more work on that. I will refer to Leech Lake, where we did have a problem with cormorants. That colony in Leech Lake is a little smaller than Mille Lacs, about 20,000 acres smaller. That colony peaked at over 2,500 breeding pairs. And our management goal in Leech Lake is 500 breeding pairs of cormorants, and we have a very healthy and vibrant walleye fishery up there right now. So right now, my hunch is that it's probably not a major smoking gun with cormorants on Mille Lacs right now. But we're going to watch it closely, and we're going to continue to work with our federal partners to figure out what we can do. So what about if this fishery recovers? What are we going to do? We're not going to focus fishing mortality on a narrow size range of fish anymore. We're going to try to spread it out across a wider size range of fish. We don't want to repeat the issues of the past. The amount of harvest will be based on the size and age distribution and also the amount of females and males in the lake. So we're going to have to be a little more flexible in how we manage from year to year. There are trade-offs in pounds and numbers. There certainly are. If you recall that complex graph with the different colored lines, the amount of fish you can kill is dependent on the size of fish that you kill. So if you want to kill fish between 14 and 20 inches, you might have a sustainable harvest of 200,000 pounds. If you want to kill fish between 18 and 24, that sustainable harvest could be higher. So there's a lot of trade-offs in trying to manage this and try to figure it all out. And public input is important as well. Do you want to kill fish or do you want to release fish? As you know, our angling clientele are very diverse. There's a lot of walleye guys out there right now that are perfectly fine with releasing fish, but it's also a fish that's popular for consumption as well. So we have to weigh in these social values when we work out all the biology. We're not planning on stocking walleye. Recall the graph on Red Lake. Recall my metaphor, the bucket full of water. We won't achieve anything by stocking more walleyes in Mille Lacs right now. The lake is producing as many small fish as possible. It's really, really clear to us. Not only that, but we found out from very recent genetic work of walleyes in Mille Lacs compared to walleyes all around the state, they are extremely unique genetically. They're at the top of a drainage basin, the Run River drainage system. They don't have many lakes above it. We've stocked it in the past, but for the longest time we left it alone. And now when you look at the dendrogram of walleye genetics, Mille Lacs is way out here by itself. If it does, and I pray that it doesn't go that route, if it does get as low as Red Lake and we have to stock, we're going to have to go into Mille Lacs and get the eggs out to put them back into the lake with a higher stocking rate. If we bring in an outside genetic source, we're going to cause bigger problems. We're going to induce something called outbreeding depression. We know this is bad. There have been studies all around the country to show this in fish populations. We don't want to do that. So stocking in the lake would be a supreme challenge. That's also why we want to conserve the spawners so they can keep spawning. They can be producing the wild fish that we need in the system. There's a suite of things that we're doing for research and monitoring. Our standard suite of assessments that we do, they're very extensive. We even do them for forage fish now as well, so we can see how abundant key forage species are. We're going to continue looking under every rock we can for what's causing this elevated rate of juvenile mortality of young walleyes. And we're going to look at every other possible change in the system, understand better what's driving water clarity. We know that when water clarity increases, fish production comes down. If Mille Lacs could have produced 450,000 pounds of walleye back in the 70s, it's probably down to maybe 300 to 350 now because of less nutrients going into the lake. We really need to understand those fundamental components of how production works. And then invasive species are going to be a challenge for a long time. We really need to understand how they're going to affect the system. And also what's happening with prey dynamics in the lake, primarily tulipy and yellow perch. So that was a lot of information. That does conclude my presentation, and I will be happy to try to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Chief Pereira. At this time, we do have a quorum, so I will officially bring the hearing to order, and the chair will move the minutes from March 18th. All in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Good presentation. Thank you very much for the presentation. There's some things that I feel that maybe we didn't cover very well. I think that we probably should have had more of a presentation from you on what is happening with the tribes and the netting that's taking place there. And I have a feeling that some of the members of the committee will have some questions on that. Also, you referred to Red Lake and the issue that happened up there, and I think a lot of people compare Mille Lacs to what might have happened at Red Lake, and maybe we could have done a little bit better comparison there. Can you answer a question for me on Red Lake? From the time that we realized that there was a bad problem on Red Lake, and from the closure until the time it opened, what was the time frame there?
We estimated, when we closed the fishery, we estimated it was going to be about 10 years before we reopened. Because the fry stocking worked so well, you want to close? Okay. Because the fry stocking worked so well, we opened it in about 7. We stocked, I think it was like between 35 and 40 million fry in 1999, 2001, 2003. Because they were stocked into a void, they exploded, and the system recovered quite a bit quicker than we thought. The other thing that's important about Red Lake is the technical committee knew that that lake would recover without stocking. We had to bring in fish from Pike River. We brought in an outside genetic source, and that was a very difficult decision. The Red Lake genome may be gone as we know it because we swamped it with a different genome of fish. And that the technical committee anguished over that decision because we knew that walleyes are like weeds. If they have good habitat and they don't have problems with other predators eating their young, they produce a lot of fish fast. We knew the lake would recover on its own. We also knew fairly confident that if we did stock, that we would recover it quicker, and we did.
And Chief Pereira, what do we think happened to Red Lake? I mean, what was the cause there? I think a lot of people believe that it was the netting that took place there that destroyed that lake.
It was fishing mortality. Clearly it was. I will also add, though, that when things were going down, the state wasn't restricting its fishery either. So we have a very healthy partnership. The unique thing about the Red Lake is the closed reservation. If we don't establish a healthy partnership with the Red Lake Band, we're not recovering that system. So we agreed very early on that we weren't going to point fingers, that we were just going to fix the problem. And we fixed the problem, and now it's a productive fishery for both parties.
We'll move on to questions from members. Representative Cornish.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, the first question was cormorants on Leech Lake. I know they went into control up there. Did they ever get any good statistics on what a difference it made? And the second question was on Spirit Island, where they roost or whatever. Is it just that island is controlled? Are there any innovative methods you can use? I mean, they have to get to and from it, and they do fly somewhat like ducks. Have you ever thought about boats out there and whack them before they get to the island? Or is that allowed by your taking methods if you want?
So, first of all, on Leech Lake, Leech Lake is a very confounded situation. We have some good indication that the level of predation by cormorants on small perch and young walleyes was too high. But at the same time that we started controlling cormorants, we also started stocking walleye fry into the lake as well. My opinion is that we didn't need to stock walleye fry because there were so many spawners in the system, but we did it mainly for social appeasement, if you will. So I think there's pretty good evidence to show that the control program on Leech Lake was justified and it's working well. But I also want to repeat what I said earlier. We're managing the cormorant colony on Leech Lake for 500 breeding pairs, which is also where the cormorant colony is on Mille Lacs. Wildlife Services with USDA APHIS does our control for us. These guys know how to shoot birds. It'd be much easier for them to go on the island, and they could under the EAW that the Fish and Wildlife Service has us do cormorant control statewide on. It's easy for us to go in and take less than 10% of adults in oil eggs. That's what we were proposing to do in Mille Lacs. But the Fish and Wildlife Service, the migratory bird people, would have to see compelling evidence that cormorants are a problem in Mille Lacs before they gave us the thumbs up to do that. Otherwise, they would oppose it. And that's not the refuge system. That's the migratory treaty bird system. Now, the refuge system, what they told us was that if you pass shoot birds in the water a certain number of feet away from the island, you can do that and you don't have a problem with the refuge system. But that's also harder to do. And the other problem is you could inadvertently haze those birds off of Spirit Island to another place. That other place could be Hennepin Island. There's a small number of birds breeding on Hennepin Island. Hennepin Island is also a tern colony, and terns are protected, so they're trying to keep cormorants off of Hennepin Island. This problem gets complicated in a hurry. So I hope that answers your question.
Representative Cornish.
Just a real quick comment. There was a netting problem in Red Lake, but when I worked that as a game warden, you would not believe the amount of overfishing there was also. People were driving all the way from Grand Rapids all the way up to Red to fish, return home with the limit, and come back. And they even got so tricky as to change boats, change clothes, hats, because they knew the wardens were taking notes. And just Pelican Lake, another lake, just for instance, we had an unbelievable crappie population coming off there. They were bringing them out in freezer bags this big. The word spread, and we sat there and watched limit after limit after limit go out. So, and that's just put a little plug in. That's why we need more conservation officers.
Mm-hmm. Representative Lloyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for the presentation. I got a couple areas I'd like to cover. One is, could we go into a little more detail on what the regulations are with respect to the boats on the lake with the night ban? Obviously, that has a huge economic impact on what people can and can't do with their boats. They travel up and down the lake. Just to visit their neighbors, to visit restaurants, and taking fish and tackle out as we had to in previous years is just a huge problem. So I'd just like to hear again in a little more detail how we're going to deal with that.
Okay.
Chief Perrell.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. Mr. Chair, we really anguished over this quite a bit, and we processed it heavily with enforcement. We acknowledge that people want to boat at night for reasons other than fishing, for the reasons that you present to us. So what we've decided on is this. If you're not going to have a line on the water, you don't have to clean all your fishing gear out of your boat. You can go boating to a supper club, or you can go out for a ride, or you can go out and watch the fireworks after 10 p.m. Not a problem. If you have a line on the water, that means you're fishing muskies, and you better have every bait in your boat larger than 18 inches, and all your sucker minnows better be larger than 18 inches, or you're going to possibly get ticketed. That's what we decided on. Same thing with the bow fishers. They can be out after dark, which they do when they're using archery for harvesting carp. They can't have any angling equipment in the boat at all, and then they can go out at night and do their sport.
Mr. Chair,
President, look.
Just a quick correction.
Mr. Meyer,
that's 8 inches, not 18 inches.
8 inches. Sorry.
Yeah. That'd be a big minnow.
Yeah. That'd be a keeper.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you. I just can't impress upon everybody how important that is. That we've got flexibility there with the other recreational opportunities that the lake provides. The other area, and you mentioned the importance of working closely with the band. One of the things I became aware of here just late yesterday was that we have had some netting here this past week in some lakes that weren't declared, and so I live right there, so mm-hmm. I've got a pretty good idea which ones in my immediate area are under that circumstance. But how can we, first of all, make sure everybody, and that's obviously the band knows, and I would suspect you guys know which lakes are declared, but mm-hmm. where can we go so there's no misunderstandings for the average citizen, and they understand that there are smaller lakes around that area that are declared and netting is allowed? Because I'm concerned about we don't need to cause an inadvertent situation that raises mm-hmm. tensions on this. So what can we do in this area to make sure that there's no misunderstandings of what's allowed and not allowed?
Representative Lewick, Mr. Chair, very good question. There was an incident where band members basically went to the wrong lake. I think they were supposed to go to South Long Lake, and they went to a lake close by. I can't recall the details. So we will. This is the first year. The bands always declare smaller lakes based mm-hmm. on the sustainable harvest, but rarely do they go there. This is the first year because Mille Lacs is so low that they're actually starting to fish other lakes. So we need to improve our system whereby they know where they're going. They don't use our DOW numbers for identifying lakes. So we're gonna put it on our summer meeting with the bands as a key topic to discuss. And they're going to want to do this. They don't want their band members making mistakes like this, obviously. So I'm confident that we'll be able to work out a system that will keep a mistake like that from happening in the future. And I did recently see a report on what they've harvested, and on a lot of the small lakes, they were still well under their allocation. So they really didn't take as many fish out of these small lakes as they potentially could have.
That's a look.
Thank you. It's really important that we move on that information right away, because obviously we're in that process right now, and we don't want any misunderstandings. I will agree that there is some complication, because as I understand it, the two lakes that were involved was Upper South Long Lake mm-hmm. and Lower South Long Lake, mm-hmm. Right next to each other. But really concerned about that we get that information out so everybody understands what's acceptable, not acceptable. The other question, obviously, those 75 pike and it was four walleyes and I believe 25 rough fish that came out of there, will those count against someplace so that we don't, it would seem like that those would need to count against the harvest somewheres, mm-hmm. and the alternative is if it was you or I did that, they wouldn't count against the harvest, would they? It would certainly be serious repercussions had citizens without that opportunity to take that harvest would have made that kind of a mistake. But are we going to count those fish against the harvest someplace in another lake?
Representative Lewick, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure how that would work. With all these individual lakes, we have a separate allocation for each lake because the fish abundance could vary from lake to lake. We haven't had, that could be part of our discussion this summer. I mean, the incident happened. They're done fishing now in the 1837 area. I believe they're done. We'll have to have a discussion about how to make that correction this summer. But I'm not sure how that would work right now.
See, I'm very interested in that. If you need any assistance, you've got my time because, like I say, those lakes are spread out all over in that immediate area around Mille Lacs, and we want to make sure everybody understands where we're at on that, and we don't have any misunderstandings in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your report, Chief Puro. You know, without the Blue Ribbon panel, would you not have discovered the near demise of Lake Mille Lacs on the walleye side, even though I know you have years and years of data that you've collected? Could you comment on what you discovered from that? Because I noticed that you made a comment in the Mille Lacs Messenger lately that the DNR is admitting to having made some mistakes in management.
Sure. Representative Erickson, Mr. Chair, sure, I'll be glad to comment on that. We didn't have the Blue Ribbon panel to come in and tell us that walleyes were going down in Mille Lacs. We knew that was pretty obvious. We want to know why, what's causing it. The lake is so confounded that there have been so many changes. We independently determined that these young fish have an elevated rate of mortality. They're not surviving as well. Is this real? Is it an artifact of how we sample the fish? That's why we wanted to give them our data and say, analyze this, and you tell us why you think the lake is changing, to see if our opinions of the change are correct, our hypotheses that would explain the change are correct. And they pretty much stated that it was. The only thing that they brought up that we did not look at was cormorants. Our errors in the past was this focus of too much fishing mortality on fish between 14 and 20 inches. That's easy to fix, and that's not, in fact, you could argue, that's not causing the problem with the elevated juvenile mortality. That's happening before they even get to the fishery. These are fish that are 1, 2, 3 years old, that are from 6 to 12 inches long, before we even start to manage them through managing fishing. So that's why the problem is so vexing and so challenging. We could state that because we protected a lot of females, we now have an abundance of eggs in the system. We put a lot of money in the bank. That's giving us some more time now to try to figure out what the heck is going on with predation on these young fish. On Leech Lake, when we looked at fry density, we saw that we could stock so many fry in the system where their resultant survival later on would be low because there were too many. So we looked at fry density recently in Mille Lacs to see if there's any relationship between fry density and eventual abundance of that year class later on as four-year-old fish when they're coming into the fishery, and there's no relationship there. So I hope that to answer your question.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you negotiated a new five-year plan yet with the bands? Because I know it expired some years ago, and you were putting it off. Are you still putting it off because of these issues, or have you renegotiated a new five-year plan, or whatever years it is?
Okay. Yes, Representative Erickson, Mr. Chair, we are putting it off. It's both the bands and the state have determined that it's 1 year at a time right now until we try to determine what's going on. It doesn't make sense to have a longer-range plan when we have severe problems that we're trying to solve. So that's essentially the mode that we're in right now, 1 year at a time until we figure out what we can do to turn the ship around.
Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. That's very important, I think, to our area to know that you're taking 1 year at a time. And finally, I just want to remind you that, you know, I requested a financial report of the costs around surrounding the management of Lake Mille Lacs, and I'm still waiting for that. So okay. I look forward to that and sharing it with my constituents. Thank you.
Other questions, members? Chief, could you give us a little bit, like I stated earlier, could you give us a little better perspective on what the DNR, what the state of Minnesota and the DNR and the negotiations that take place with the tribes when you try to figure out what the take of both the anglers and the tribe's going to be. Can you give us a little bit more of a perspective on that? I wish we'd had some charts, too, about how much fish over the years, what the poundage has been for their quota compared to our quota. I wish we had seen something like that.
Yeah, we did have one graphic on that that I showed near the end of the introductory material that had the time series of the state harvest and then the band kill as well to put it in perspective. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for that question. And as you know, you kind of have a heads up on the rest of your committee because you've been able to attend some of our January meetings and observe the process. So I will go over that.
I just want the rest of the committee to understand.
Sure. So what we do is we run the best estimation methods we can to determine the poundage of fish in the lake larger than 14 inches, basically. And then we take 24% of that number as a total poundage of walleye that can be killed for the coming season. So if there's 1 million pounds of fish in the lake, then the total kill is going to be 240,000 pounds. The band, until the past couple years, as Representative Erickson indicates, the band had a five-year plan that showed how their fishery would ramp up. And so I think the last plan started at about 90,000 pounds and went up to about 140,000 pounds. So that would be their declaration of that safe harvest level, as long as their declaration was less than half of the safe harvest level. So if they were declaring 140,000 pounds, but the safe harvest level was only 200,000 pounds, the safe harvest level is the total number of fish that could be killed by all users. So if their declaration was 140,000 pounds, but safe harvest level was, say, only 200,000 pounds, they would bring their declaration down to half, which would be 100,000 pounds. And then they would go forward and they would fish in the spring and take their fish and they would stop fishing if they reached their allocation. The state would go forward and look at what we were going to catch and try to find a regulation that would keep our anglers within their allocation. So that's how it's done. In recent years, because I think this might have been part of your initial question, Mr. Chair, in recent years when things got really bad, the band said, okay, we're going to abandon the five-year plan. Let's determine how many fish we can kill only if we can really slow down this decline in spawners, and we'll take 28.5% of whatever that number is. So this year's safe harvest level was 40,000 pounds. They're taking 28.5%. That leaves 28,600 pounds for state anglers to kill this coming year. That 28.5% comes from their average proportion of all the fish killed in the lake since they started fishing. So that basically tells you that of all the walleyes killed in Mille Lacs since 1997, the bands have killed about 30%, state anglers have killed about 70%. Now, acknowledging this problem with too much fishing mortality on smaller size fish, they acknowledge that that's a problem, and what they've tried to do in the past couple years is encourage their fishermen to fish with the spear and take larger fish. And so they're making an effort to do that. We'll see how well it works. In the future, they may need to diversify the mesh size of gill nets they're using. They may need to go with bigger mesh sizes. They could maybe use trap nets. It's up to them to determine how they want to fish to meet mutually agreed upon conservation goals.
Thank you. Representative Lewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that same topic, when we talk about these smaller lakes in the area, correct me if I'm wrong, but do we have the level of intense data on those lakes, and how comfortable are we that we understand the ecology of each one of those individual lakes? Some are in river watersheds, some are isolated. Mm-hmm. A little, you know, if we're not looking at that very closely, I think both us and the band have got to really look at that, because these smaller lakes probably don't have the staying power that the big lake does, obviously. Mm-hmm. So what can you tell us about that circumstance?
Representative Lewick, Mr. Chairman, that's actually a great question. You're exactly right. They're nowhere near as productive as Mille Lacs is. They may be more productive for northern pike, perhaps, but still, they're not going to have the fish biomass that Mille Lacs does. It's certainly not. And no, we do not have the same level of information. Our large lakes, our 10 large lakes are so important. They get assessment every year. Our smaller lakes are maybe once every 5 years. Some of them we don't even get in that often. If it's a ceded territory lake, it's going to get extra attention. It'll never get the attention that Mille Lacs does. We don't have the staff to be able to do that. Now, so we have specific methods for estimating what the safe harvest level of walleye will be based on a gillnet survey. If that gillnet survey is old, so the population could have changed, it could have gone down, we have an adjustment factor to make the safe harvest level lower because the information is old and possibly outdated.
Other questions, members? Just a couple to maybe wrap up what the DNR is presenting. I know that I didn't read it very well, but I seen something in the news a week or so ago about vermilion and the netting that's going to be taking place up there, increased harvest in netting on vermilion. I know that's not about Mille Lacs, but could you touch a little bit on that, because I'm not clear on it, and I didn't read the article the way I should have probably.
Okay. So vermilion comes under the Treaty of 1854. There are three bands under that treaty. Boy Fort, which is up on Vermilion, Grand Portage on Lake Superior on the Canadian border, and Fond du Lac. Fond du Lac's actually covered by both 1837 and 1854. We have an out-of-court settlement with Boy Fort and Grand Portage. It was with Fond du Lac, but the settlement says that any party can back out with a reasonable notice, and that's what Fond du Lac did. Fond du Lac is now proceeding to develop a fishery in the 1854 ceded territory. And they told us, we want to go up the Vermilion and catch some fish. And they said, we're going to go in very light. We're only going to declare about 2,400 pounds this year. And so we started doing the work with their biological staff and our staff to determine, well, what are safe harvest levels. We've done a lot of work to determine how we can manage their fishery on smaller lakes throughout the Arrowhead region within the 1854 ceded territory. I just received notice from their Natural Resources Commissioner, Reggie Defoe, that they just made the decision not to fish vermilion this spring, this year. Why? I don't know. I haven't had a chance to meet with them yet. But we've got to try to increase our level of higher level dialogue with both Boy Fort and Fond du Lac as well.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. And one more thing. I noticed in your charts and in your presentation that you were doing some polling with the citizens, and one of the questions was about closing from 10 p.m. till 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. Is there a concern? I know that you should probably, I think, at least from my perspective, maybe taking some economic interest in when that time slot should be. I know that folks from St. Paul, Minneapolis, they want to go to Mille Lacs, they want to fish. They drive up there, and it takes an hour and a half or 2 hours, whatever it takes to get up there. You're going to fish for an hour, and then you're going to drive home an hour and a half, 2 hours. That just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Was there any consideration to maybe extending it to midnight? Making the close from midnight till 6 a.m., something like that, something a little different than 10 to 6, because it seems like if somebody wants to go fishing in the afternoon after they got off work, it would just make sense that you would have it till maybe midnight as opposed to 10.
Mr. Chairman, yes, we did actually consider that. That is a very reasonable thing to consider. We did consider that. We felt that it was just, some of the analysis indicated that we weren't going to get the reduction of harvest that we really needed, and we really were focusing on trying to do what we can to allow a reasonable amount of fishing, but at the same time try to minimize that probability of having to go to catch and release completely. We feel that the economic impact of a catch-and-release fishery would probably be greater than the economic benefit of having the closure start at midnight instead of at 10 o'clock. There are a lot of fish that are caught right at dusk. I mean, that's where most of the gain comes from with the night closure.
Okay, thank you very much for your presentation. And members, the DNR has brought us hunting and fishing regulations, off-road vehicle regulations, boating regulation guides. They're all in your packets if you'd like to take those home with you or hang on to them in your office. Thank you very much for your presentation, Commissioner and Chief. Thank you very much. At this time, we do have this room only until 12:30, so we're going to take some public testimony. So if is Commissioner Oslin from Mille Lacs County Board, please come forward. We've got seven folks that would like to give some public testimony, so we're trying to keep testimony to 2 minutes each so we can be done by 12:30.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
I'm Dave Oslin, Mille Lacs County Board Commissioner, and I represent the 5th District in Mille Lacs County, which is the north end of the county. It encompasses four townships on the lakeshore and three cities, Isle, Waukon, and Onemia. Thank you for this opportunity today and for the informational purposes here that we've heard here today. Mr. Chair, you did touch on the economics here just recently, and that is a concern of Mille Lacs County Board, the economics. And we talk here a lot about the fishery and the water clarity and things of that nature. Our concern is the economic standpoint here. And I can tell you that we're a poor rural county, and we're very concerned about the decisions that are made on Mille Lacs Lake, and especially those involved with the walleye fishery, because it is known for that, has been for many years. And whenever there's a change, it's a drastic change to the economy also. But I can tell you that at Mille Lacs County, we have our problems, like all counties do. Our tax base is roughly $18.5 million, and out of that, our commercial is only $2.5 million. So we've got our struggles, and we realize that. And we've been working on it. I can tell you at the county level, a couple years ago, we do now have an economic development person working for the county, and we're trying to be business friendly. We know we're in trouble there. We need some more tax base from our businesses, which all ties into what we're talking about here today. We've had a three-year project going at the county. We started with a new comprehensive plan, and after roughly 2 years of the new comp plan, what it showed us from the huge input from the citizens is that we were regulation heavy, so to speak. And so we've hired two outside agencies, one to help us through the comp plan, one to help us through what we call a new update of the ordinances, which we're just finishing up, and they actually go into effect May 1st. Part of that whole project that the citizens influenced us on was to reduce regulation, still keeping with what's needed, but also to become much more business friendly. So we are making our strides on that, and it does tie into the economic fingers here, so to speak, of the management of Mille Lacs Lake. Our concern is we want our businesses to survive, and we also want more to come in. So if there's one point, you know, in my brief testimony here today that I would like you folks to take with you is the ripple effect. Every decision that's made, no matter how small or how slight, and we've just heard quite a few of them with good representation and good reasoning behind them, but every decision that's made affects not only the resorts, you know, it's the coffee shop down the street, you know, and the restaurant maybe a mile away, 2 miles away from the lake. And that ripple effect is what our concern is. Again, there's a lot of strides by different organizations and things to diversify, so to speak, and not be so dependent on the walleye fishery itself. But in the meantime, we're very concerned about this. Also, I want to touch on the fact of the water clarity, which we've heard about, and it is a concern. In the mid-80s, I myself was part of that water clarity starting to go, because I used to be a septic systems installer, and I put in a number of systems around the lake, and we noticed right away the lake was cleaning up. Today, I serve on the Mille Lacs Watershed Advisory Board, which encompasses three counties. Mille Lacs and Crow Wing and Aiken. And one of our concerns and one of the projects we're working on is the water clarity in Mille Lacs Lake. And, you know, with the aquatic invasive species, there's a lot of work to do. The state has appropriated more money. We're very appreciative of that for those endeavors. But it all ties in together here with what we saw today and what we hear today. And it can be a double-edged sword, as you folks all well know here, the water clarity. But we are making strides and working on that. But again, if there's one thing that I would like you to remember is the ripple effect and the economic effect of this. And there's a lot of folks here today that can speak to a lot of other things, and they have a message to carry. You know, we appreciate this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you very much for your time and testimony. Questions, members? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tina Chapman.
Mr. Chair, Karen McCoy is coming with her, too. We might as well have both of them up.
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
Who wants to start? Just state your name and who you represent for the record. And we have a number of other folks that want to speak, and we're running out of time. So we need to keep it brief.
And committee members.
Please speak to the regulations that we're here to talk about today.
All right. My name is Tina Chapman, and I am the executive director of Mille Lacs Area Tourism. I don't want to discuss the doom and gloom that the local people are experiencing because Mille Lacs is a great place to be. But businesses and property owners are scared about their future, as well as the future of the communities around the lake, and the many are feeling the effects of the changing fish regulations. Because of the ever-changing walleye regulations, businesses, particularly fishing-oriented businesses, have experienced a decrease in their incomes related to walleye and have been forced to try and capitalize on other species. Now, we have launch services targeting smallmouth bass. It's not a bad thing. But there's mixed messages on the harvesting of fish with the regulations, because the regulations are constantly manipulated. The DNR wants us to kill smallmouth and big pike. Or was it save the smallmouth and kill the small pike? I can't keep up anymore. And businesses don't know which way to turn because of the ever-changing DNR positions on the fish harvest. Mille Lacs Tourism has been working diligently along with the Mille Lacs Band to promote diversification of the area. Some of the businesses will do it, some won't, some just plain can't. Attitudes about fishing need to change all over the state, not just Mille Lacs. And the DNR needs to do something that will work for all parties. The media damage is already done, and the DNR has to choose their words more carefully. Right now, people believe that there's not a fish in the lake, especially when headlines like 40-year low, words like dwindle, declined, decreased, are all used everywhere. Tourism is finding it difficult to market everything else because it's overshadowed by all the negatives. We've been working hard to promote our Do the Lake campaign. and I brought a few things for you to look. These are some of the things that promotional items we've done. We recently did some great social media campaigns for bass fishing and family charters, but we were crucified because of the ever-changing and crazy regulations are all hyped up in the media. It's very hard for us to sell the area to newcomers when all they see are the negative comments and have no idea what they're about. Due to the fishing regulations becoming ever-tightening, Lake Mille Lacs now has a drastically shrinking pie of interested customers. The need to replace those customers with new customers takes additional dollars to convey the promise of Lake Mille Lacs outside of our traditional walleye fishermen. I've asked Representative Erickson and Senator Brown to help acquire additional marketing funds for the area, but I think it's maybe a little too late for this session. Maybe it should come out of legacy funds, DNR budget. Either way, we need to continue our efforts to keep everyone in business. Mille Lacs Tourism's main source of funding is the lodging tax, and if those amounts dwindle, so do our marketing efforts. We need those dollars to market the area, but more importantly, we need businesses to market and draw people to the area. Otherwise, our efforts are wasted.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Karen McCoy. My husband, Kevin, and I own a resort on the southeast corner of Lake Mille Lacs. I'm here again to testify to how dire the economic situation is for us as a result of the regulations you just heard the chief talk about. He gave you his perspective. I'm here to give you a little bit more of a human perspective and our business experience. These regulations impact our fishery and surrounding community. They significantly erode our ability to operate our resort, just an hour and a half, 90 minutes away from the Twin Cities area. In any business, there are ups and downs. We all know that the economy suffered quite a bit over the last several years and is starting to come back. But tourism dollars are really the slowest to come back. So we're still waiting on people having extra dollars to be able to even spend on recreation. Basically, we've been treading water, kind of trading on location. Being 90 minutes away allows us to try to encourage folks in the Twin Cities to come up. But these recent conditions have eroded our economic situation even further. The fishery, the subject of many news articles, specifically the poor health of our walleye population and invasive species, don't help. The latest regulations continue the downward spiral that is our livelihood. The media does us no favors. To sell newspapers or make TV ratings, they highlight the negatives. We now screen when we get calls from media asking what kind of slant they're going to present our area with, and we won't participate in conversations that are negative. So we continue to try to do our best to promote this area. We understand that there's issues with the fishery, as the chief just presented. It's encouraged all of us to work together as resorters to promote our destination, not just our own resort, but the whole area. Of course, there's still some negativity within those ranks, but for the most part, we've been working very well, collaborating with resorts and the band to try to promote the area. Some of the things that the executive director, Tina, passed out are examples of that, and we encourage you to even look up that tagline, Pound to the Lake, because we're trying to promote that it's more than a walleye fishery. We're trying to paint lipstick on a pig. We're trying to do the best we can to get the people there to enjoy this resource. One of the things that the chief just mentioned is that he is trying to get input, more input. And I would pass this around. Last month I was here talking to you about transparency, that we wanted to get a better idea of the funds that are being spent by the DNR. So all of that data sounds really well and good, and Mr. Pereira can say that they really want all of this input. However, as I mentioned last month, our Mille Lacs input group continues to be frustrated with a one-way input from the DNR to the group. He shared a table, for example, that told you about how they came about the fishing regulations and said that they chose the most popular regulation. Well, what he didn't tell you is that even though there are 32 members on that board, more than half the group refused to participate. So the table he put up there and showed you that 33% said this was the best idea, it might have been 33% of 14 people. That means those regulations were based on input from 5 people. So we are rather skeptical when the chief says that he's increasing the citizen-involved decision-making process. As I said, last year I was here, some of these notes are from last year, and last year I told you that the DNR announcements of significantly reduced walleye harvest levels make our challenging conditions damn near impossible. Well, this year I'm here to tell you again, it's even less possible. We need your help. We need intervention. We need relief as we continue to work to counter the perceptions and survive the next few years of this limited walleye harvest. We need leadership from you in this room. It's not just for the resorts. Tourism is critical to all of our communities, and there is a trickle-down effect, as Commissioner Oslin mentioned. Without tourism dollars, local businesses lose revenue, jobs are lost, families leave. Families are leaving to go to North Dakota for better job opportunities, and tax revenues dwindle. Last year when I was here, I told you that our school was one of the very few in the state that had not passed a referendum to help us keep that school operating. Well, our referendum failed, in large part due to an inability of businesses and individuals to dig deeper into already thin pockets. We're not surviving on the business that we have. We need your help to stop this cycle. Intervene on our behalf. Require revisitation of the harvest policy, as the report that the DNR commissioned from its Blue Ribbon panel actually recommended. They said revisit the harvest policy. Please hold the DNR accountable for the devastation wreaked upon our area. Our lake, as you even saw in those slides, has been studied more than any other lake in the state. For decades. And to what end? We don't know where those dollars are going. Representative Erickson can't get transparency to see where it's being spent. but there's a whole lot of studying and not a lot going on as far as results. Mr. Pereira just said, and I quote, "We've got a lot of time to figure out what's going on because there are so many abundant females." I will disagree strongly. We don't have a lot of time for the DNR to figure out what's going on. We need answers. We need economic relief. We need our lake to be back to the gem that it is for our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. We won't be able to take questions of these testifiers, members, because we have other folks that would like to testify. Thank you for your testimony. Twin Pines Resort.
Mr. Chairman, committee.
Just going to be you?
What we wanted to say is so involved. So I am going to just basically say close to 50 businesses gone around the lake during the combination treaty management period. And 10 years ago, we had 600,000 pounds of walleyes to share with the tribes. And this year, we have 40. There's something a lot more going on than spiny fleas, milfoil, and phosphate levels. Even Mr. Pereira said, our best estimation, they are trying to control Mother Nature, very poorly, I might add, and somebody needs to question the numbers and the methods. That's all I've got.
Please state your name and who you represent for the
Linda record. Eno, Twin Pines Resort.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you for coming down. Michael Gardner. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
My name's Mike Gardner. I represent Saving Mille Lacs for sports fishing. I want to make a couple comments about the presentation we heard today. My background in college was mathematics, and Commissioner of Fisheries, Mr. Pereira, makes a statement that the Blue Ribbon Committee was not biased by the DNR. If the Blue Ribbon Committee used the DNR data, the results of that study was very biased. That'd be one point. Another point that is, since we only have one fish that we can take for fishing, you have forced the lake to be catch and release. There's nothing in the regulations that are supporting catch and release to save on mortality. We don't have anything related to barbless hooks, circle hooks, how we release fish, etc. The other thing is, we talked a little bit about the net size by the Indians. They need to increase the aperture of the net so the smaller male females can get out, smaller males. And I think the bottom line is there's too much sequential things going on with the DNR. There's low-hanging fruit out there. Even though some of the things may not give us big buyback, we ought to be doing more of it in a time-compressed manner. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you for coming in today. Doug Meyenberg and Howard, do you want to come up at the same time?
Sure. I'll let Doug.
We have a limited amount of time, so. I'm sorry?
Yes, thanks for letting me testify today. I am
Doug. Please state, state your name and who you represent for the record.
Yeah, I'm Doug Meyenberg. I am the chairman of PERM, Proper Economic Resource Management, and I'm representing my fellow sportsmen. You've heard a lot on the economics of the lake, and I think I'll kind of skip that because they've done an eloquent job. First off, the Minnesota DNR is the sole responsibility of our natural resources in the state of Minnesota. They were told by the Supreme Court to make a deal with the tribes, and that has failed. It is my thought that they should take the chase back to the Supreme Court because it's not working. Conservation has been changed from a 6-fish limit to a 1-fish limit. Several other hearings over the years, the DNR was criticized for not keeping minutes from the meetings of the negotiations with the tribes, and they said they didn't keep minutes. I'm just curious if that has changed since it was actually some members of this committee that had done the criticizing. And Mr. Pereira had made a statement at the input meeting that said that I can't side with you guys up here or I'll lose my job. I'm just curious, is he managing the lake for his job security or for the security of the lake? When the or with the current regulations, with the taking the tackle out of your boat at 10 o'clock, it sounds pretty simple, but if you're at a public access and you have to pull your boat in, take out all of your walleye gear, and I mean, normally when I fish Mille Lacs, and I fish it as often as I can, I have all my tackle for all species in the boat, and at dark the walleye gear would go away, the muskie gear would come out, and we would fish muskies. To drive a truck back down to the landing, unload everything, and not take a chance of missing a lure under 8 inches, to me doesn't make sense. I'm thinking that Mr. Pereira had said that the fishermen were over 96% complying with DNR knocking on their doors. I think that that's probably the overall fact, and why don't they trust me to put my walleye gear away? And if they see me out there fishing walleye, then tag me. You know, your average fisherman is going to be compliant. I think that the numbers are way up there to begin with. And I just find it for job performance, if when the governor and Mr. Landwehr took over the managing of Mille Lacs, you could take 540,000 pounds of fish. Now you can take 40,000 pounds of fish. Does that sound like they lost a half a million pounds of fish somewhere? In any other job, you would be fired. And I realize there's co-management, but they always have the front door to go into the Supreme Court. And since he did make one comment about Red Lake, I'd like to make one comment about Red Lake. Red Lake belongs to all Minnesotans. The 1926 U.S. Supreme Court decision, Holt decision, said that. The DNR knowingly disobeys a U.S. Supreme Court decision. That lake should not be divided tribal, non-tribal. It is for all Minnesotans, and that was stated to me at a public meeting by then Commissioner Mr. Miriam. So, thanks for your time.
I'll go Thank quickly. I'd like to talk about two.
Howard,
Mr. Chairman.
Howard, please state your name and who you represent.
My name
is
Howard Hansen. I'm the founder of the Hunting Angling Club, chairman of that, and I am the editor of the Resource Sentinel. And yesterday I brought over big packets for you to look at. There's a path to justice and victory in there. We represent, or we support the interests of the private landowners who are full interveners to the Mille Lacs Treaty case, who have never had justice. They've never been heard. They were totally ignored at the Supreme Court. And we still have one widow that represents one of the landowners who died, who worked real hard to save his constitutional rights. I just finished this paper. I worked on it for a year. It's about the history of the federal Indian policy change, the American Indian movement, the civil rights movement founded by Dr. Martin Luther King, the whole evil mess and all the injustice that it breeds. 12 years ago, I went to the Evangelical Lutheran Church, my church. I'm a member of Gethsemane Lutheran out on Highway 7 in Hopkins. And they
Howard, I
know we don't have time for questions, but I really just have to object to the civil rights movement being characterized as an evil mess. That's all.
when AIM slipped into the civil rights movement, it changed.
Mr. Hanson, just...
Yeah, right. But okay. Anyway, I got invited after starting to question the church's support for tribal sovereignty, tribal treaty rights, and tribal gambling, even. They were supporting it. And so I started going to a peace and justice forum. And after 8 years, we formed a tribal task force. And we've had meetings with tribal citizens, like about 2 years ago this month, we had a meeting on the Council of Churches Indian Center on East Lake Street. Lead pastor Ron Letness filled 3 blackboards with the injustices in Indian country. We had half Indian people there and half others. And we all just start talking about the injustices to both communities, like what's going on at Mille Lacs right now. You're listening to it. There's no justice in justice for Indians and treaty rights and tribal sovereignty that takes away everybody's rights. Number one, the Indians have no rights. They are uneducated. They're taught to only be Indian. And I could read you something here if you had some
excuse
time.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Are we going to allow this?
It's just a lot of injustice going on. And our state, the constitutional leaders, are not doing anything to do it. The DNR didn't lose that lawsuit. It was the governor and the attorney general. And I'm over here trying to find support to go back to the constitutional officers. And I hope members of your committee and the legislature will help put pressure on the governor and the attorney general to ask for a new presidential order that Sandra Day O'Connor, in her ruling, said, if this doesn't work, state of Minnesota, come back here and ask for a new presidential order. So I plead with you to help stop the injustice and restore the citizens' rights of the state of Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Are we going to have that racist dribble on the minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Hanson. Thank you, Mr. Meyenberg. Members, that'll conclude our hearing today. I know that another committee wants to come in here, and they have to be in here by 12:45.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry? Representative Erickson?
I just wanted to call your attention to a handout that Linda Eno had passed out for members to look at, the open water fishing effort from 83 to 13 in regard to the open water night. And you will see in this graph that it is just about negligible. Thank you.
Thank you. Also, I wanted to state to the DFL side of the aisle, I wish some of the Iron Range delegation were here. On the House floor last night, there were some comments about not giving a hearing to the issue on the Iron Range. I have extended an invitation to the Iron Range delegation a number of different times. I wish they were here so they could hear this, but I offered to them many times anything that they needed. If they needed an informational hearing on a particular issue, if there were any other bills that they needed heard before this committee, I was perfectly willing to do those things, and I wish they were here to hear those comments. So with that, members, meeting is adjourned.